All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another Serious Angler podcast powered by our friends over at X2 Power Batteries. Back again with another show, another live show with the captain, Mr. Andy Full. And of course, I'm your host, Bailey Egbert. And
The man.
Andy, we got a pretty awesome show tonight.
And a Wednesday night live. I think we should throw that out there. Like, we don't really ever go live on Wednesday, so this is an anomaly for us, but it's awesome.
Yeah, we're a Tuesday night live, Wednesday post the audio, the MP3, and a Friday MP3. And this week we've done Monday night live and Wednesday night live. Yeah. What is happening?
I mean, we've had Monday night lives for fantasy fishing shows, so that's not like irregular. But I just want to say thank you to everyone who tunes in live here tonight. If you're tuning in for the live stream, it's awesome to see everyone in the comments already and people showing up. So it's cool.
Yeah. We got our frequent folks that are probably getting the notification. Why the hell are these guys live on Wednesday? They got the dates all wrong. Somebody's messing with the calendars.
You know, we're after Halloween, everything goes haywire. And then on Saturday, the clocks go back. Like, we're all going to be messed up here for a week or two. So
that's right. Wait. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have a fun show. There's a reason why we're going live tonight. One, we got our boy. The Wonder Beard of the YouTube space coming on the Wonder Beard coming on to talk some river fall kayak fishing, not even really kayak fishing, just river fall fishing in general. But obviously we're gonna talk a whole lot about that, and you can expect some tangents, especially when old Ruds joins us here. But we got a new guest coming on. We're gonna introduce him here in a little bit. We got a couple things to go through first, but tonight's show is going to be pretty awesome, guys, because one, we're obviously going to be running a pretty big giveaway. You've seen a thumbnail. There's going to be a big giveaway announced, but it's for a good reason. We are going to be, obviously, if you've been listening to recent shows and keeping up with social, we've partnered with the folks at Project Purple to raise some money. And we're bringing on our boy Sam here in a little bit to uncover exactly what Project Purple does. And so you guys can learn more about that and how you can get involved on the giveaway and help us join the fight. So we'll get into that here in a little bit. Alex, thank you. Yes, my hand is looking a little heavy now. I went the route of tungsten, so my hand is 5 pounds heavier than my
other one. And I'll tell you this, after being married for 6 years, it doesn't get lighter. Because I know. Same boat. Like, it's always heavy. It's annoying, but it's awesome. So
welcome. I'll make sure to tell your wife that you said the ring is annoying.
Oh, I tell her all the time, like, this damn thing's so heavy, I need to get a lighter
You're one. Lucky I love you. I wear this ring.
And sometimes I do say that as well. So
tell you what, the silicone's a move.
Yeah, I got to get me a couple of those. Like, when I fish, I just take it off because I'm like in between sizes, and the half size smaller didn't fit. And then this size is like too big. So when my hand gets cold, like, you can see it just like falls right off, right? Like,
and I was like, bear paws. You know,
yeah, I leave it in the truck when I go fishing, or I'll put it in my pocket and then put it back on. A silicone one would probably go a long way.
Yeah, dude, I wore it fishing this past weekend, the silicone one, and I didn't even know it was there. So
nice.
I think it's worth it. I ordered like a 10-pack for $20 off Amazon.
I should just borrow one of yours.
That's what I got the evil eye when I told my wife. I said I ordered those, a 10-pack for $20. I was like, yeah, I should have gotten this in the first place instead of the nicest. Yeah. She didn't like that.
No. And they're expensive. Like, that's the worst part. If you lose it, it sucks. It's so expensive.
Well, we went the somewhat cheaper route where it's tungsten. It's like $200, but I got a Batman logo in the inside of the ring.
Of course you did.
Well,
now,
hey,
now because
Halloween
of that.
Yesterday, 6 years ago yesterday at Halloween is where we met.
I like it.
Yeah. Good. And I was wearing a Batman costume. So that's
so fine. We got the Wonder Beard and the Dark Knight. So
I like that.
We're doing good.
Wonder Beard and the Dark Knight. That's a dang comic book, boys.
I feel like shit's about to get fucked up. Pardon my French. Whoa. Sorry, pardoning my French here.
You couldn't even wait the six or 8 minutes or whatever it is so you don't get demonetized.
Oh, my bad. Edit it out.
Reboot. We'll restart. Reboot. No, just kidding.
There's no restart button on live.
Oh, I was used to parents driving to school with their kids this morning for no warning.
It's evening. Foul language. Evening.
Well, yeah, when they listen to us at a later day for MP3, a random drop. But nonetheless, we should get into today's show. And really fast for you guys, tomorrow, if you're listening on MP3, Obviously, it's going to be today because we're dropping on a Thursday. But moving forward, every Thursday, we will be dropping a new Kayak Fishing Weekly episode. They start tomorrow. We'll have Justin Largent, who's joining the Serious Angler Network crew, who's going to be hosting that show along with myself, talking everything kayak fishing. Really looking forward to those shows. I'm on MP3, where you find Serious Angler, Biz from the Bass Boat, Lure Lab, all that jazz. But it'll also be posted here on the Serious Angler YouTube channel, so you can find all those episodes. Encourage you guys to go look over there. And, of course, tonight we'll have the link down to the giveaway that we're doing here, Project Purple, but also the link to the giveaway for Rec Lending that's giving away around $10,000 in cash and prizes. And it's pretty dang easy to get signed up for that one, too. So I encourage you guys to do both. Head down there. So I think, Andy, without further ado, talking about the Project Purple giveaway.
Yeah.
Let's bring in our boy Sam here. Sam, what's going on, man?
What's up, guys? Just kind of pumped to be here, man. This is cool.
I got to say, you easily have the best backdrop out of all three of us right now.
Nah, thank you. I'll let our graphic designer know. He'll be pumped to hear it.
Andy, we got to figure out how to make just like some sort of fishing backdrop, because it's like not like the... It's the, what do you call it? It's like the, you can do it through like Zoom or whatever. Mm-hmm. What is the name of it? It's not actually a backdrop. It's, I don't know, regardless. People watching know
virtual
exactly.
Virtual background or something.
Yeah,
virtual. I think that's a virtual background.
We could have some fun with that. It might actually be risky, but that could be a lot of fun. But nonetheless, Sam, tell people one what you do at Project Purple and what Project Purple does for people.
Yeah. So I'm the marketing manager at Project Purple. I do a lot of the social media stuff, a lot of the email stuff. Basically, my job is to kind of find new ways and exciting ways to get people involved. This being one of those things. I'll kind of take a step back and kind of give the founding story here a little bit. So Project Purple's biggest flagship thing is endurance races. You know, marathons, half marathons, stuff like that. That all started when our founder, he got big into running when his dad was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in 2008. Unfortunately, his dad passed away in 2011. But throughout that entire journey, running was like a huge positive outlet for him. Just like fishing, it's kind of a meditation. It's an opportunity to take your mind off stuff and do something that humans were designed to do. And, you know, you're chasing something. You know, we might be out here chasing fish. Runners might be chasing a finish line or their Strava app. But in 2010, while his dad was fighting, he wanted to do something. At first, he wanted to do something to help his dad. And then as time went on, that obviously kind of had to evolve. So he wanted to do something to help other people and other families that are going through this to make their lives a little bit easier. And to hopefully one day create a world where no family has to go through what he went through. So we started as a really small run team. Now we've become a national and even international organization. We're at the 5 biggest races in the world and many, many more. We support people in like their local ones as well. We're in Boston, Chicago, New York, London, Berlin, most notably. But again, like I've had people run little local 5Ks in their own area. We like to try to support people either way. But on top of that, we've grown into all kinds of other cool spaces and fundraising avenues to try to empower people to make a difference and provide outlets. Maybe that outlet for you is fishing. We have a program where we kind of give people the resources and the fundraising page and set them up to do that. Now, as far as like the fundraising, as far as our fundraising, kind of like the other side of things, this is a disease with a 12% survival rate. So our biggest initiatives are all kind of focused on changing that and really improving those statistics. Mm-hmm. One of the big reasons that the survival rate for this disease is 12% is because it's caught in stage 3 or greater 75% of the time. So the survival rates when caught in lower stages are kind of comparable with a lot of other diseases like other cancers, but because they're found so late and the symptoms are kind of vague, the survival rates are what they are, which is really unfortunate. So every day we kind of fight back against that, mainly through early detection research. And then we also help patients and families directly through our patient financial aid program. So we've helped over 1,200 families afford to fight this disease with cost of living things that go up whenever you're dealing with a diagnosis like this. So I know that's a bit of a mouthful, but that's kind of what we do. And it all kind of revolves around empowering other people to use their outlets and the things that they already love to do to try to help other people make a difference in the fight against pancreatic cancer.
Hell yeah, man. Fighting the good fight. And I know when we talk about the saying, right, that real heroes don't wear capes, like you guys kind of get the unsung heroes of it all, the people that are behind this, you know, pushing forward. And I know obviously this topic will hit home for our guest today too. Good, very, very good friend, best friend of mine. And we'll get him on here in a little bit to talk about obviously fishing here, but what you guys are doing is awesome. And when we've always talked about on the show that we've recognized that we've gotten to a point where our voice carries some weight and we want to do some good with it. You got into our DMs and I was expecting like some things to come here and there that we could, you know, help share on social or something like that. But when you came to us with this idea of how we could actually make a legitimate impact, one was pretty humbling, and I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity here. And it's awesome to hear what you guys do. It's impressive what you guys do. And I just want to say from everybody, thank you.
Well, I wanted to say thank you. I mean, the only reason I found out what you guys were doing is because you kind of put out an episode. It was like a solo one. It was a little bit like heartfelt and reflective. And I know you kind of reached out asking for, you know, people to come forward with a way to kind of help you guys make a difference. And I mean, that takes a lot, especially when the format of your show is something that's not always that, like it's a lot of like groups and stuff like that. So I appreciate you so much. I appreciate this opportunity because I'm a fan of fishing as well. I know like most of our organization's focused on running, but I'm definitely more of a fisherman. I'm a huge fan of you guys' show. I'm a huge fan of your guest show. So the fact that you guys are doing this is really awesome. And I thank you guys a ton for that. But I also want to thank you individually as an angler, because you guys have taught me a lot. So thank you.
Wow. You made our guest, right? Because I don't think you can learn anything from these two jabronis that are up here.
Okay, when you're starting from where I started from, you can learn a lot from you guys.
So really fast, let's go through this on the giveaway that we're doing. Because so obviously we got together, we've been talking about this for probably a good month and a half now of preparation. And you've done a knockout job of putting this all together. I got to give you all the props for it. So guys, this is a giveaway that you can get in on right now. If you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, there is a link. Or if you're listening at a later date on MP3, there's a link down in the description in the show notes where you can go and get in on this. It'll take you to a site where you have a chance to enter the giveaway. And basically all that requires is a donation from you guys that goes all to Project Purple here to help us help them and join the fight against pancreatic cancer. And you have a chance to win. We're in pretty big. We have an X2 Power 100 amp lithium battery, a $200 Berkeley bait package, some Hobie sunglasses. We got some Klondike custom spinner baits, some Serious Angler swag, and some Project Purple swag. So a lot of freaking cool stuff that we're putting out there for grabs. You could do a dollar. You could do up to $100. You guys kind of get the point. However many dollars are involved is how many entries. So if you donate 10 bucks, that's 10 entries. And I'll say thank you to the three people so far that already went in there. We have $135 raised.
Awesome.
So far. So guys, go down there to the link. That's how you can enter that giveaway. Pretty freaking sweet stuff. Yeah. Anything to add on that, Sam?
Yeah, no, I think you crushed it there. I'd like to give a special shout out to a buddy of mine who at behind Klondike Custom Creations, who he makes these spinnerbaits by hand. They're pretty darn cool. I wish I could get a little bit more zoomed in because there's a lot of detail and neat stuff, and he does an awesome job. So wanted to give him a little special shout out. But aside from that, we also have some other awesome prizes. So definitely hop in there when you get a chance. The link is actually, we tried to make it easy to remember. It's just donate.projectpurple.org/serious angler. And then again, like check the comments, check the captions, and you'll find it
for sure. Yeah. So like straightforward for you guys, just go to the show notes, and go over, and you can see what you can win, but also where you can donate. It's a super easy process. But that's how you can get entered. And obviously we'll keep this going. We're going until the 21st, correct?
Yeah, that's what I have.
21st. So
I think it was the 21st or 22nd. Right? Yeah, I think the week of Thanksgiving.
Yep, we'll go, and so we'll have that week. We'll have our Thanksgiving show, and that's where we will announce the winner. We'll get old Sam back on, which, by the way, for folks, we're also going to call Sam Andrew's long-lost brother. I don't know if you guys can see this, but they are freaking twins. We're convinced.
Oh, man, it's all only because I shaved my beard for Bailey's
wedding. It's the glasses. Dude, it's everything. You guys are literally twins. But for real, thank you for the opportunity, Sam. Guys, get in here. Get some donations in there. Let's help them fight a good fight. So without further ado, Sam, should we bring in our guest for today and start talking some river fall fishing?
Oh yeah. I could use some fall pointers for sure. I've been struggling this month, so let's bring them in.
I think everyone struggles just a little bit in the fall from time to time. So
I just struggle all year round. So
yeah. Oh, stop it.
Without further ado, the beard wonder. Mr. Alex Rudd.
Here I am, the bearded wonder. Batman and the bearded wonder.
It's got to be our show. It's got to be our thing now.
Yeah, Batman and the bearded wonder. I say we just add another one to the Serious Anglers Network, Batman and the bearded wonder, and we'll just get on here and talk about, I don't know, whatever the hell comes up.
I don't want to know what would be discussed.
We've talked about doing another show with anything, aliens, cryptids, that kind of stuff. I'm down for it.
We talked about that. I remember when we were talking about it, we were saying
in Wonder Beard,
the dark night in the
general outdoor by the campfire story time.
Yeah, we were saying some of the topics we talk about, we would just like AI ourselves so that it can't be personally tracked back to us.
Dude, serious rabbit hole. I'm seriously worried about that. Like I'm really worried. Like we're gonna, obviously with us, we're not near as famous as anybody that like they would actually AI. But like, have you seen the ad going around with Joe Rogan where it's Joe Rogan talking about like, it was called like Neurobrain or something like that. And it's like a gel, like nootropic. Well, it's not him at all. It's literally completely AI made. And like Rogan is like suing them now for using his likeness, but like it's completely AI made. And he never said any of those things. And they just used an AI that sounded like Rogan and pieced it all together to make it look like he's like using this product that he's not.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's scary. I'm going to use Alex Rudd to endorse Serious Angler.
Do it. Yeah, I mean, because I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, that's right. Nobody in their right mind would. Like
what was my favorite one? I had somebody on.
Just AI Rudd and make him do all kinds of controversial topics and make him.
Well, you don't even have to AI me to do that. I do that on my own. But like, I had someone on one night and I said, my podcast is the only podcast on YouTube sponsored by X2 Power Batteries that's worth listening to. There's another one, but it sucks. And I won't forget it because someone left a comment and they're like, if you're talking about Serious Anglers, I enjoy their podcast and I don't understand why you don't like them. And I'm just like, bro.
Somebody said that?
Yeah, I was like, it's a joke. I was like, that's my buddies. Like, kinda. just sort of kinda. It's a joke. But
I want to see that. Yeah. I'll play the part.
So listen, this Project Purple thing, everybody should go donate to it because that really is an awesome giving opportunity for you guys. And I'll tell you right now, as somebody who has dealt with cancer with my dad, and unfortunately it took him, and dealing with cancer right now with one of my grandparents, cancer sucks, and it's probably one of the most stressful and life-altering things that human beings will go through. Whether it takes them or not, it's still just life-altering and just the most stressful thing that you'll ever deal with. And so stuff like what Project Purple's doing, where they're alleviating some of the financial burdens that kind of come with cancer, that's huge. Because, my mom and dad were lucky because my dad was very blessed, had a very good job. He had very good health insurance. But he would still get sent bills for $170,000, $200,000, $300,000 that, eventually the insurance would figure them out and they'd get them down. But still, even then, they were $40,000 and $50,000. And so there are people who don't have health insurance. They don't have good health insurance that get cancer, and they're getting those bills and they're having to try to figure out how to pay them back and how to do those things. And, you know, if you've got cancer and you can't work and you know, you're down to a one income family when you're used to a two income family, and you're getting $50,000 and $60,000 bills at a time for chemotherapy, it literally ruins somebody's life. So stuff like what Project Purple is doing, not only on the research side, but on that personal side as well of helping those people, that's awesome. So I've already donated. So everybody needs to go donate just something small. I always tell people, it could be a dollar, it could be $100, but every dollar is a step towards helping somebody. And I don't know, you know, Sam, what it looks like over there, but I'm sure you guys have some kind of scale model that's, you know, even if it's 10 bucks, 10 bucks can usually be something life-changing for some people because of the way you guys are able to use it.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that we do too is a number we use. We also send people like a blanket of hope while they go through chemo. Mm-hmm. Because one, it's cold. Two, man, especially through like the pandemic, sometimes you're in there all alone. And that obviously sucks. But it's costs like, it costs, I mean, we send it to people free of charge. It costs us $36 to send a whole care package with like all kind like that blanket, all kinds of like hopeful messaging. And then, man, anything that like, if you think about it, like a cup of coffee for you might not mean a lot, right? But for the family and for somebody that's driving somebody to chemo, well, that cup of coffee is one less thing to worry about. Yep. Anything that you can kind of like relate to a cost for your, even for yourself, mm-hmm. Those small things make a really big difference in a situation that might be a lot more stressful than your own.
Yeah, I'll tell you guys, my dad's big thing after chemo, he got a Whopper every time he got done with chemo. Right before the chemo sickness set in, he would get himself a Whopper. And, you know, like, it's what, $5 to get a Whopper or whatever. But, like, dude, it was a morale boost for my dad. You know what I mean? It was something that made him feel normal for 10 minutes. You know, it was something that reminded me he didn't have cancer for 10 minutes. You know, and so.
We'll pick me up.
Yeah, a little pick me up. That's all it is. So, I don't know, man. It's his this is special. Like, it's the special stuff. Anytime we can help people about cancer, man, like people just, unless you've been there, unless you've done it, unless you've experienced it, you don't understand it. But just know that even if you haven't been there, you don't understand it, that it is seriously like, you know, for a lot of years, you know, you'd hear, oh, somebody's got cancer. And I was like, ah, man, that sucks. Now I find out somebody has cancer and it pauses me hard. Like, I hit the pause button for 10, 15 minutes and really just think about it because I know what that person's about to go through. So I don't know. I just thought I need to say that, tell everybody go donate because these are good people helping do good things. And I like good people doing good things. So
that's right. Yep. Yeah. And to, I guess to add on that is like these days, it seems like from a statistical standpoint, you're going to come across it in your lifetime.
Yep.
It's going to happen.
Oh, ain't that the truth?
Yeah. So again, I mean, it's one of those things, right? I mean, it's a pay it forward. It's one of those things that I'm a firm believer. I mean, I'm not a big religious man, but I'm a firm believer in what goes around comes around. So you put out good, good comes to you, and firm believer in karma. So help people that need some help. And because there's going to come a time when you need some help, you're going to want the same being done for you.
Absolutely.
Boys, I'm sure we're going to talk more about Project Purple throughout the night, but I think Sam is fiending for some fall river fishing, Alex.
Yeah, I need some tips, man. I got to figure out how to catch them.
I love fall river fishing. My favorite time of year.
Unless it's on the Niagara in a downpour and it's like 45 degrees.
Yeah, that kind of sucked. But
hey, you know, it felt great for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Really pushed our asses. What happened? That was fun.
I wasn't trying.
Yeah. Dude, the worst part is when you crank that crankbait down there and watch them and they literally wouldn't move on live and you're just like, this is crazy. Like, and this is nuts.
And Bailey's like, shoo, got one. And you're like, yeah.
I mean, at one point, Bailey would just be like, got him. I'm just like, F you, man. Like, I just F you. Like, I'm just so dumb. With you, I'm so done with you. But no,
God bless the Japanese.
thanks to the Japanese. You know, you can always thank them. Them already got though. So anyway, let's talk about some fall river fishing, man. What do you boys want to know about it?
Sam, do you want to lead us?
All right, hold on. I have an idea. Sam is now the host.
Nice.
Oh God. All right. Get ready for more rabbit holes.
Hey, that means you're destined to be a podcast host.
Oh, God, dude. So I'd like to know, like, in the fall, when are you picking up a moving bait versus when are you trying to flip a little bit or drag a drop shot or go finesse? When do you start cranking? When do you stop cranking?
No, yeah, I like that. I like that. So for me, especially where I live, and this can kind of, I mean, this really does play about anywhere in the country, because realistically, I'm looking at water temperature more than anything. You know, so a lot of people, you know, they're going to be like, oh, these tips don't apply in South Dakota. Well, first of all, user 604, you know, South Dakota makes up not even 1/300th of the entire country. So I don't care about you. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, no, but like, seriously, it doesn't matter where you're at. I'm looking at water temperature, right? Water temperature is my big dick. My big dictator.
Whoa. We're clipping that.
Now we know where Rudd is going.
Water temperature is my big dictator for what I'm going to be throwing and how I'm going to be doing it. So fall for me really starts when that water hits 60 and starts dropping. And from like 60 to about 50 is when I'm going to be throwing things like buzz baits, ploppers, frogs, you know, that more power fishing topwater stuff, you know, bladed jigs, spinner baits, those types of things. Then when that water drops below 50 and we start seeing those fours and sometimes even those threes, that's when I'm going to pick something up, you know, a little bit slower and, you know, start dragging something and or pick up something like a flat-sided crankbait or a small body medium diving crankbait. And so, you know, that's kind of my big thing. Water temperature is everything for me when it comes to bait selection, really anytime throughout the year. But, yeah. And then when it comes to like flipping big baits, like jigs and stuff, it kind of all falls in that buzz bait and, you know, frog category as well.
So with the, especially cause obviously we're talking about current here and with that, I mean, even when you're talking threes, when you get down to the 30s, does your number of bites still drastically drop in the current, or are you still getting a decent number of bites? You're just switching gears in regards to technique.
Yes. Yeah. Both. And maybe like, it just depends. Like it really does. Like it's so,
we talked about this off air, right? Like,
yeah,
it just doesn't matter. Every day is a wild card.
Yeah.
Dude, it's now it's brought sandbags on all the people he takes fishing.
1000%. 1000%. So, yeah. I mean, so here, so, okay, so we've talked about this before because we did a podcast about river fishing. If you're not listening to that, you need to go do it. Serious Angler, it's awesome. It was the last time I was on the show, I think. Mm-hmm. It's all about what the current is doing. So I have two current situations around me, man-made and natural. So that man-made current, it's going to depend on how much water they're pushing out of that dam, depending on how many bites am I going to get? What am I picking up, you know? Are there going to be more fish there or less fish there? The current situation or natural current situation for me, what I've found is it is literally kind of a roll of the dice type thing. Like it's like what fish have moved in there and what fish have moved out. You know, it's like where, you know, I caught my PB at the beginning of October, PB spotted bass. And what's so wild is like that day there was just enough current moving through that river because of that dam that it made those bigger than average fish position where they positioned. And I had a chance to swing on that big one. And like, the thing is it could be the difference of like, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 extra cubic feet of water per minute that makes those fish position and do different things. Then the natural stuff is just about like what fish are moving in, moving out. You know, I mean, we've all fished a school of fish where it seems like some days they're 2 pounders and some days they're 4 pounders. I don't know why or what makes the bigger ones move in or the bigger ones move out, but it's just, it is, you know what I mean? I think that's the thing about fishing is if we could figure that part out, like we would all, you know, be fishing tournaments and just taking people's money. Like we don't know why they do what they do. Sometimes it's just, they're there and then they're not there, you know?
And they almost always never read the book. So
yes. Like, yeah. Yeah.
But the book tells you a smallmouth is doing, the smallmouth is probably doing something different.
Exactly. I mean, dude, it's just like the day we went out fishing together, all of us before Bailey's wedding.
Yeah.
I mean, you
they
know,
were there.
They were there. And I mean, they were there. They had been there. You boys had been smashing them. You've been taking guide clients out. You had been on them. And then for some reason that day, you know, it was back. If we were to read Bassmaster magazine, everything was in our favor. We were supposed to go out there and smash them. And there was something about the way that current was flowing. Maybe it was the rain. Maybe it was the pressure. Whatever it is, it's just, hey, we caught 9 fish instead of catching 19. And like a lot of these river fish, it's regardless of temperature, you know, it's the same sort of deal. And I wish, like, you know, a lot of people are not going to like that. They're going to be like, man, I want like the golden bullet. Well, there's not one. I wish there was, because if I knew it, I would tell y'all, but I don't.
It's called private water.
Yeah, it's called private water. I mean, seriously, you know, and
10-acre lake, private water, have fun. That's stocked.
Yeah, yeah. And so to answer your question, yes, no, maybe, sort of, kind of.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sounds like my answer to every test in high school.
Uh-huh. Yes. I'll give you a lot of generalities around here. That is.
But I mean, that's a good point, though. C. It seems like in the fall, like, Andy, you can attest this 100%, because how many times have we seen, especially in the Great Lakes, class schools will class exclusively, especially in the fall. Mm. Like, it seems like if you're on a school of 3 to 4 pounders on Lake
that's
Erie
all or you're gonna catch.
Lake Ontario, you might as well go 100 yards away from them and do a whole circumference, because you'll probably run into 5 or 6 pounders somewhere nearby. Definitely seem. Am I wrong, Andy?
Oh, no. But, I mean, who's going to complain about catching hundreds of 3.5 to 4 pound bass? So sometimes it's just kind of hard to leave them.
You, so, you're the person that complains about a bunch of 3 or 4 pound bass.
I know, but then I laugh every time I hook one, because I'm like, this is dumb. 14 casts in a row. Yeah. And then the next day you can go back to the same exact spot and they're gone.
So, okay, so Shane O'Gorman's over in the comments. I'm going to propose the question to him and try to let him answer it in the comments, is why do fish school by class and size? Because that is something that I have. When I hooked that 6.5 pound spot, she had 5 spots just as big as she was with her, trying to take the bait out of her mouth. If I catch an 18-incher, there's another 2 or 3 18-inchers with that one. If I catch a pounder, they're all pounders. Like, it is the strangest thing, and it's almost always, to me, seems it happens in the fall, is like those fish school together by size. Because like in the summer, I've been on a school and you catch a 7, a 2, a 3, a 1, you know what I mean? It's like random. But it seems like in the fall they start just school by size and class. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah,
it truly is. And I see it a ton with like Great Lakes smallmouth. It's just ridiculous. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess we're on the 3 pound train today, because every spot I go, it's just 3 pounders. And then you get off of it just a little bit, and there'll be one big mark, and that big one will be all by itself.
Yep.
And you're just like, interesting.
Rogues. And then you have that too, those big rogue fish. I can't explain those either. So,
or when me and Destin caught 29 and change in a tournament, literally all of our fish came on one spot in 6 casts.
Yeah.
Like, and then they wouldn't bite the rest of the day. So like,
yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Sam? Have you noticed any of that down by you? Where
dude, we have, Rhode Island has weird water. It's a lot of like man-made impoundments that were once creeks and rivers, and like it's you take the best parts of fishing in Connecticut and the best parts of fishing in some of Mass, and you throw those out the window and take the worst parts, and that tends to be Rhode Island fishing. So fall's really tough when you're chasing like bluegill eaters and yellow perch eaters for the most part, which is a little weird. So I'll tell you what, if you got any advice, any of you, on kind of like chasing yellow perch eaters through the fall, I'll take it, because it's extremely hard to find that information.
Yeah, I feel
I would say probably just a swim bait. Like, try to find the bass and throw swim baits around them. That's what they do in a lot of like the glacier lakes, I feel like, because a lot of our fish on like the Finger Lakes and through the Adirondacks and even into like Vermont, I know, eat perch, like a lot of perch. So, and I know a lot of times it's just a swim bait that is what dominates it. Maybe go up a size or go down a size and see what they want to eat. Don't throw the same stuff you throw all summer.
Well, yeah. Here's your answer, Alex.
So the 2 pounders can keep up with 4 or 5 either, just like in Little League. 10-year-olds won't do well against 15. Okay, that makes sense.
I think he was trying to say 2 pounders can't keep up with 5 pounders.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, because like, you know, if you catch a 6 pounder and it's got 4 6 pounders with it, if there's a 1 pounder swimming around, there's a good chance they might take a swipe at it. Like, yeah. It's almost a self-defense mechanism to like not. And then two, I've seen when the shad are spawning, this is going into the spring, doesn't really apply to what we're talking about, but regardless, I've seen in the spring when like a 4 pound largemouth will get stoned by a striper. And so they won't school together, but they'll start feeding together and just like they'll get killed. And so it may be just a natural defense. Like they go, hey, we're not going to jack with something that big because I could die. You know, I mean, it would be like us if a bar, you know, if a bar fight broke out and you got a group of Navy SEALs, I wouldn't get in the middle of the group of Navy SEALs because they're probably going to kill you, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. So, yeah.
It's like my youth hockey coach asking, hey, there's kids 4 years older than you. Do you want to go practice with them? Look, going and seeing them. Be, nope, I'm good. Nope. Yeah. Good. I choose life.
Yeah, I choose life. But no, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. I don't know why that seems – I don't know why that seems so easily overlooked.
Yeah, yeah.
It's something so simple.
Yeah, yeah. And I think – I mean – it's weird. That's just a weird. I mean, I guess you just, it is. It's one of those simple things. It's one of those duh things. Like, I've heard people say things before, and I'm like, wow, I could have thought of that, but I didn't. And I don't know why.
Don't know why I didn't think of that. No, yeah, no. I think I do love the fact that current is, like we, like you opened up with, is always the negator, where it's regardless of temperatures, you will get bites.
Yes.
It's just a matter of fish seem to do very weird things. From a river system standpoint, especially when falling temps. Anytime there's falling temps, fish tend to do odd stuff. It seems like, regardless of system, but even river included, where if the textbook isn't working, flip it on its head and do what the textbook tells you not to do. And that seems to be what gets you bites at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the most current is everything. I mean, like, for me,
current with breaks. Not well, just trade current, but you need something to fish to hide.
Get below the damn discharge. You will die. But like,
you might catch fish.
Yeah, you might catch fish, but you will die. But like the thing, man, it's just current. You know, my dad always used to say this. I always say this. It's the thing that I talk about the most. The three most important things when it comes to catching bass is current, and more current. Because that is, it forces those fish to do what you want fish to do. It positions them where you want them to be positioned, because that natural instinct for that fish to feed is going to take over when current starts hitting it in the face. And what it's going to do is it's going to find something to hide behind or hide in or hide under, and it's going to sit there and it's going to wait for something to pass by it, and it's going to try to kill it. Because, you know, when those fish are in current, it's not a situation of, can I eat this thing? Yeah, they can totally eat it. It's, am I going to have a chance to eat it? And it's the ultimate situation where that reaction bite is always going to work. And so, Sam, going back to your question earlier, that also kind of dictates whether I'm throwing something moving or not. If I don't have current, you know, if they've turned the dam off, or I'm in a big, long, you know, dead stretch in a river, even if it's a naturally flowing river, I'm going to pick something up slow and I'm going to drag it around because those fish don't have to be anywhere. You know what I mean? Right. But if that current's moving, or I'm in an area where that current is naturally flowing, you know, a lot harder than it normally would, I'm going to pick up something moving and I'm going to throw it and I'm going to cover a bunch of water. Because in fall fishing current situations, and really any current situation, but fall fishing especially, it's about keeping a lure in the water as much as you can in the areas where those fish are going to want to live. And that's literally anywhere where there's a current break, or there's a current seam, or where there's a back eddy, or there's anywhere that fish can just sit there and wait for crap to come by its face and then kill it. And so, you know, when I'm talking about fall fishing, like that's, or fall river fishing, you know, that's my biggest thing, is just move, groove, and put baits in fish's faces. And those fish are going to live behind things, under things, and in things when that current is going. You know, I got a video coming out, just got done editing it, went out with my buddy John. And so every day they've been turning this dam on at 9 o'clock. We've been putting in right below the dam, and we're floating from the dam down. And well, this morning, for some reason, we got there, they didn't turn the dam on till 10. And guys, I'm not joking when I say this, we fish from 9 until 10:08, and at 10:08 the current hit this bridge pylon where we started at. I had fished that area for 1 hour and 8 minutes with no bites. At 10:08, I throw the buzzbait up on the bank that I'd thrown at 4 times. I reel it twice, and a 2-pounder blows up on it. That current immediately forced that fish into position and just immediately made that fish want to eat. Like, they are so dictated by current around here. It's just the way that they're bred. And anywhere that you've got a dam discharge, you've got moving water, you've got anything, those fish are going to be the same exact way. They are hardwired to sit in current and to kill because it's their opportunity to just eat for free. I mean, it's essentially like us sitting and someone going, hey, man, I'm going to bring you a sack of hamburgers every day at 9:04. I'm going to bring you a sack of hamburgers if you just sit right here. Those fish are the same exact way because every morning at 9:04, when that current finally gets down to that first bridge pylon, that spot, it moves up there, and then here starts coming rock perch and normal perch and shad and crawdads that get picked up off of the bottom because these smaller bait fish cannot get out of that as easily as a bigger fish can. So it just grabs them and starts pushing them in the first natural eddy point, the first natural break. It dumps that shad into there. That shad's able to kind of get in there, get its orientation. And as it's getting its orientation, old Mr. Green Jeans or old pissed off brown fish goes, okay, I'm going to murder you because you've been brought to me to eat. And that's what happens. I mean, it is like, it is simple. 1+1 fishing right there, ladies and gentlemen. That's as easy as it gets.
Do you think any of that is, you know, we talk about not even just fish, but like people or specific animal species, how there is a DNA through heredity that is dropped down, like the ancestors, you know, like deer were learned when to flee, when to run, when to be scared, like how humans are sometimes naturally scared of the dark or something like that, or could have been from our, you know, generations, your ancestors. Do you think something is like that with a bass that learns that they're already born knowing when there's no current? For whatever reason, they just don't want to eat. Because it's not that they can't eat when there's no current. It's just, do you think that's from instinctually, like that's their instinctual DNA when they're born?
Yes.
I guess it's a question for our biologist friend in the comments, if that's
could be a factor. Yeah, I mean, and I think you'll agree with what I'm about to say is, yes. Because fish, they're predators, dude. I mean, at the base of anything, regardless what they passed out from DNA, whatever they've learned from living in current or whatever, they're predators, and they're ambush predators at that. Opportunistic ambush predators. Just like a lion or, you know, any other big cat species, they Sasquatches, yes, they reach up to grab your ass. Anyway, but any big cat species, you know, or any of your more opportunistic reptiles, i.e. reptiles are a lot, like anacondas, snakes, they're all opportunistic predators. You know, they're not running out and hunting things down. Now, will bass do that? Absolutely. Normally you see bass do that though in giant reservoirs where there isn't any current, where they're not, where they can't just sit and wait for something to come to them. That's when I think you get more to that like genetic disposition to learn something over time. I think a bass is naturally driven by current because where did they come from? They come from rivers and creeks and streams. You know, we didn't have lakes 10,000 years ago, except for the Great Lakes. But for the most part, all those fish that got filtered into those areas were probably coming from lakes and from rivers, you know, rivers and streams and moving bodies of water. And so all that being said, I think it's just a natural disposition for a predatory animal, an ambush predatory animal like a bass, to want to be able to sit, wait, and kill. And that current, again, it just forces them into a position where they can sit, wait, and kill. And, you know, big fish don't get big by running around all the place. They get big by being able to sit and get fat and be the biggest, dominant, most pissed off mean thing in that area. And they do that by just being lazy. And so, yeah, I do. I think it's a genetic disposition, but I think that when we're talking about that sort of genetic disposition, that sort of learned behavior, I think that's like hardwired in. I think that that's been in that fish for as long as that fish has been that fish. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like the same thing as when fish know that there's a front coming and they start to eat. Same deal.
Yeah, it's the same exact thing. And I think a lot of that, I've read some stuff and kind of I get this idea, and this is more of an idea, and maybe Shan can back me up. And I think I've talked about this with a biologist on my other podcast. But like, it's like a feast or famine kind of deal. Like the fish cannot rationalize the difference between a cold front and a warm front and a volcanic explosion. Like they're both things that like they just know it's not good. They know that there could be a prolonged period of time where they're not going to be able to eat. And so that big kind of existential change, you know, that macro level change in the weather and the environment in which they live, it forces them to go, I need to consume so that I'll be okay on the back end of it. You know what I mean? And I've heard some biologists say no, bass, you know, they just eat when they can eat and it's part of it. But I just think it's weird that fronts affect fish so much. You know, if they didn't have that disposition and that kind of natural drive to consume in order to conserve themselves on the back end of something bad, then why would a front affect a bass as bad as it does in some situations? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, Andy, what do you think? Fall's your favorite time of year.
Fall is my favorite, but least favorite, because it can be so challenging, but so rewarding and fun. Well, it's tough to say because, like, we don't have reservoirs up here. Like, we have some, but ours are all natural current. Like, the Niagara River is, like, one of the greatest current places in the world. Like, the current rips. And you saw how fast that thing can go, Alex, just naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think there's a big difference between natural current eaters and hydroelectric current eaters, because as you're explaining, right, the hydroelectric dam is what's forcing these fish to get in position. On the Niagara River, where I live, they're always in position to feed, but they don't always feed. There's like time windows. Mm. But when they go, as we saw as soon as we pulled up on that first school, when they go, they go.
Mm-hmm.
But when they don't want to eat, they don't want to eat. Now, one of the biggest things I've learned is with these natural current systems is if you have any bit of wind that either forces against the current and slows it down a little bit on the surface or pushes with it, you tend to get more bites because then there's something extra happening to that water, which is making them think, okay, I need to eat now because something is happening. Mm-hmm. To where we're getting on that clock ticking here before it's about to be winter and they need to eat. So, yeah. And another thing too, like up here in the north, I don't know if this happens down in Tennessee, and I'm sure it does. A lot of our fish are developing their eggs right now. So they need to take in extra protein and eat extra food in order to develop and grow eggs mm-hmm. to spawn in the spring. So, oh, geez. Yes. Always. Every live.
I think we need to make Anthony Geis a moderator of this show because he's here every dang show and with the best comments of the night. Says someone say volcanic explosion. My daughter gave us the stomach bug. Definitely going to make the Richter scale in this household.
Oh my God.
First of all, poor thing with the daughter for having the stomach bug, and then the passing it is even worse. Yeah. But no, yeah, Andy, you're correct. I mean, that's one thing that I like about like natural current. And it's one of the coolest things, and this is a reference that I've used before. Steve Rinella was talking about it once. He was talking about, like, you know, there's places in nature that you go and you say, hey, there should be some deer over there, and there's some deer over there. You know, hey, there should be a bear over there, and there's a bear over there. It's like a natural thing that is untouched by man, that they're just always there. You know, and they've always been there. They're always going to be there. It just is what it is. And I think those naturally flowing streams and river currents are the same exact way. I mean, I cannot tell you how many little creeks around here flowing out of the mountains that I've gone to. And it's like, hey, throw right over there. I bet you there's a fish. And damn, if you don't throw over there every single time and there's a fish. But like you said, especially I think with big bodies of water like the Niagara River. I mean, that's huge. I mean, it's enormous. People don't understand. It's a big-ass river. The Mississippi River is the same way. I mean, these big, big rivers. I think you're correct in saying that, like, you know, anything though that may change that current on a big macro level, wind blowing another direction. I mean, it's like the day we were fishing, the wind was blowing down the pipe at us with the river current, which was making it go just a little bit quicker.
Yep.
And that probably was what turned those fish off. And what was funny is we caught those fish early in the morning, or Bailey did. And then the wind started to pick up as the day went on. And, you know, you get some more of those kind of solar wind currents that get up as the sun comes up. Is even though we couldn't see the sun, it was raining outside. It gets those currents going. And that wind started blowing a little bit harder. And, dude, the fish turned off. And it was because it was blowing right down the pipe at us. And you actually said that. You mentioned that. You said if the wind was blowing the other direction, we'd probably be catching a few more.
Yeah, probably.
And those are the thing. I mean, and that's the thing. That is nature just being nature. That's where I think with a fisherman, man, it doesn't matter what baits, rods, reels, what scent technology you've got. I don't care what it is. That is just being a good outdoorsman and going and looking and saying, hey, the wind's not blowing the same direction it was the other day, or the sun's not shining, you know, the same way it was the other day. And I actually had a conversation like that with my buddy Josh. We went fishing and that front was moving in. And he said, dude, I just don't understand why these fish just aren't positioned and eating like they were the other day. I said, well, dude, when we were out here the other day, it was bluebird sky. I said, it forced those fish into those shade lines. Those shade lines were harder. Those areas are now, you know, they're not as hard. And you've also got the wind blowing straight down the pipe on some of these current areas that we've been fishing. So not only are we going faster, but then there's no sun to position those fish either. Two giant macro level things that we cannot control that just fish just aren't eating as good. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I've always leaned on being a good outdoorsman, being, you know, notice what the moon's doing, notice what the weather's doing, you know, even if it's big duh things like go, hey, what's different about today? Oh, the sun's not out. It's cloudy. Probably a reason you're not catching a fish. You know what I mean? So, amen, brother. Can I get an amen?
We have Anthony saying Pastor Rudd is firing him up.
Hey, you know.
We got a good question here from Paul Benson, one of the great folks over at NPFL and ARC. He's saying, is there a correlation between volume of current and size and or quantity of fish?
Ooh, that's a good question. Andy, I want to hear yours first, and then I'll kind of tell you my theory on it.
So I don't know if I have, like, a direct thought, because I've never really thought about this, like, in totality. But in the short answer, I think I'm going to say no, because I've fished heavy current and caught little fish, right? And I've fished lighter current that's 10 feet away, but the structure is correct and you catch your biggest fish. Like, yeah, there's something about a big fish sitting in current, but you also have to remember big fish are lazy. They want to be in the smartest spot possible where maybe the bait fish are going to come down and they can just kind of poke their head out real fast and bite it. Like, I have a couple areas on the Niagara where there's intense current, and then you have a break wall or some type of structure that kills the current. And sometimes at certain times of the year, the biggest fish will be living there, but it's only one fish. Mm-hmm. Like, I find when they're just on like a random flat and there's a substantial amount of current, it tends to be like a bunch of 1.5, 2, maybe 3 pounders, because those are the fish that are more apt, and they tend to be more streamlined and skinny because they're just out there fighting in that current all the time. Mm-hmm. So I personally don't think there's a big correlation between volume of current and size, unless it's smaller fish, like in my personal, what I've seen.
Mm-hmm. So I agree. The only thing that I've seen on my end, and now mind you, man-made current, dam discharges, you know, like every gate's opened up on a dam and they're just like dumping water out because we get
a lot. Ones bite a lot better when it's like that, don't they?
Yes. Yeah. And I honestly think it's just because the littler ones can't compete. And so you just don't have the competition, plain and simple. You know, I think that it has nothing to do with the fish aren't there. It's just that, like, that 1 pounder's tucked up next to that rock. Like, oh, good God, I can't do anything. Where that 5 pounder's like, oh, I can kill that shad and get back to this rock. You know what I mean? And so, like, I think that that's plain and simple what it is. It's just that they're able to compete when those smaller fish can't compete. And so I think more current is more better sometimes because it's just that fact. You eliminate some of that competition that those bigger fish have, because it is funny.
And they're less wary of your bait as well, because now they need to act to feed. Yep. As to where my fish, where I'm at, there's always so much current. Mm-hmm. That they're already accustomed to the way that they're going to set up and baits are going to come by. And that's why I said my answer. I feel like my answer is different than yours, because mm-hmm. our fish literally act completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and they do. And that's a whole, that's a northern thing versus a southern thing too. Yeah. I mean, those fish see, and I always will say, when it comes to northern fishing, those fish have an ultimatum called ice and called winter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the river doesn't freeze, but it does get to the, you know, I mean, it does get to a point.
You
in the
get a
winter.
Bunch of icebergs.
Yeah. So, and I mean, it gets to a point where those fish, not only does the water get cold enough that they kind of go into that almost suspended animation where they're just like there existing, waiting for it to warm up a little bit. But then you've also got the thing where humans can't jack with them either. And so that ultimatum of like, winter is coming, like freaking Game of Thrones, y'all's fish act completely different than our fish do, because our fish don't have an ultimatum. And Bailey, that goes back to what you said earlier. I think that's a genetic disposition in the difference between fish. Is like our fish, they, I'll tell you this much. Was it 4 or 5 years ago? It got like really freaking cold down here. Like cold, like northern cold. Like, you know, lakes started freezing, you know, whole backs of pockets and whole creeks were freezing solid, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Dude, it jacked our fish up so bad. They did not know what to do. Like, they were lost as last year's Easter egg. They wouldn't bite. You couldn't find them. It was killing them. It was killing bait fish. It was killing crappie. It was killing all of these different fish that up there where you guys are at would be able to survive. Like, they would be fine. But our fish, I mean, just like me coming up there, I'm freezing to death. Like, it's like our fish were just genetically dispositioned and so used to it being a certain temperature and not getting that cold that when it did get that cold, it was such a shock to the system. It started putting them down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I 100% agree. I did see a question earlier I do want to address because I think it's a really good one. They were talking about fishing baits with current, against current. You know, what kind of is our dictator for whether we do that or not? Andy, I'll let you go first, bud.
Oh, so, sorry.
This one right here?
About moving yeah. with or against current. Ooh, that is actually a really good one. And it's all based on where the fish is set up. So, like, using your electronics is key to figure out where these fish are sitting. I don't know how it really works, like, the TVA dams and stuff, but I'm assuming you're looking for current breaks or big boulders. So, like, the biggest thing that I like to do is always cast up or cast, would be perpendicular, so you're bringing it back to you with the current. But I like to cast up into the current and slow roll it back if it's like a crankbait, like a spinner bait or a swim bait, and kind of swim back to you. Because if you watch, sometimes the bait fish, when they're running away from prey, they'll turn and run down river and go as fast as they can to get out of it. Mm-hmm. Or if the bait fish aren't moving, they're unpressured, they're just head first into that current, just sitting there swaying. So you want to make it, try to make these fish react and chase the bait as it's coming by. So it's getting that boulder, bringing it past it, making those fish react. And now the complete opposite spectrum, if you're crankbait fishing, I find if you go like 45 to whatever your target is, that's when you're going to get bit on something like treble hooks. Mm-hmm. So, because if you're throwing it straight up into that current and you try to bring it back, you're basically fishing a topwater at that point. It just doesn't get down.
I agree. The only thing that I'll do different is like these really shallow, like when I say, you know, river. So Andy's talking about the Niagara River. You know, average depth, Andy, out there is, you know, what, 10 to 20 feet, something like that?
Yeah, I would say roughly that.
Okay, so same here, you know, if I'm fishing below a dam. Now, when I'm talking about like a river where I got to go get my kayak in it, you're talking about an average depth of 2 feet. Like, you're bumping rocks at certain points. You know, you'll hit deep sections and, you know, deep is 8-10 feet at the most, but they're still right up on the bank. What I like to do is like I'll fish out straight out from the bank. Like, I'm throwing up into a current seam or throwing up into an eddy or throwing behind something. And as soon as it hits the water, engaging and start reeling in it. And if you bring it just through that fish's area there, they're going to try to kill it because they're kind of in their own little like pod there. You know, that current
biodome.
Yes. Like that current seam or that eddy is like their own little dome. Like, and perfect. It's like a little dome, a dome surrounded by moving water. And if you get something in their little dome, I can promise you whatever direction they need to get their body, they're going to flip and kill it. And so that's something but that's different because it's a lot flatter, a lot shallower. And so that can happen there. Whereas, like, you know, when I'm fishing the bigger stuff like you, Andy, you're 100% that 45 degree angle with the treble hook baits. Essentially what you're doing is you're making it easier for you to fish the bait. And that, and like, if you get it in that fish's space, they're going to react to it, you know? And so, yeah, you hit a nail on the head with that one, dude. I just wanted to kind of throw that more flat, shallow water, like river, like kayak. You got to get in a kayak or a jet boat to get there, kind of river fishing, because we do a lot of that too.
So I got a question here. But before we do, I want to remind people the giveaway is obviously live. We got a bunch more people that came into the show. It is down in the description, but I also put it in the comments head on over to enter the giveaway. Again, we got X2 Power Lithium batteries, big Berkeley bait package, bunch of Sears Angler swag, and Project Purple swag up for grabs. You guys can go there and support Project Purple to enter that giveaway. Just want to remind people before we start wrapping up the show here tonight. And again, it's going to run until the 21st, so you guys have a lot of time to enter that. But come along and help us support Project Purple. But my question is for Alex, for somebody that lives on a river, and Andy, for you as well, and how this could be at a more macro level, being as how big the Niagara River is like from the summer to the fall, you know, especially I'm more curious your answer, Alex, being in much smaller creeks and river systems, the progression of where they live in the summer to where they're going to winter. Because like a lot of the creeks, like say for you, it's the same depth for the majority of the time and just a bunch of laydowns. Like, how does the fish progress from that? How do they transition? Where do they move, in your opinion?
This is not going to be a good answer. They'll be in the same places. They just live there. It's like what I referred to earlier of like,
if it don't freeze, they won't leave.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's like what I referred to earlier, because when you're talking about like small water like that and rivers, it's a lot of natural stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So like they just live there. Like it's like, you know, if I look over there, there should be some deer. Oh, well, there's some deer. It's the same with these fish. Like they'll move, I mean, dude, maybe 10, 15 feet. You know, either up a bank or down a bank. Or if current gets strong enough, like with a storm, that a tree moves away, they'll move to another tree. I mean, honestly, that's the biggest dictator of what I'm actually going to be fishing is like, what did that summer to fall transition? Because we get a lot of rain in that transition. All the country does. What did that massive influx of rain do to the river itself or to the creek itself? Did it move a tree that I normally fish? Did it move a root ball that I normally fish? Did it, you know, move a pile of rocks? Those things can dictate whether fish move or not. But for the most part, they're going to live where they live and just live there because that's where they live.
So do you think, like, say a river system that is mostly consistent but has a couple of deeper holes, you'll get a percentage of fish that'll move on to the deeper hole, but some will still stay where they have been all year round?
Maybe, like if they have an opportunity to move there, you know, because especially in a natural river and even in some of these man-made current situations, you know, these shoals and these things are big enough that they prevent fish from moving. And so like you'll have a group of fish that just live in an area, live and die there. And, you know, if the water gets up high enough or for some reason they get out, and like current grabs them and they get pushed away. Like our biggest, you know, another big dictator of whether fish get moved or not, us as humans. If I pull them off of that piece of cover and then drop them in the river current and they can't get back to their piece of cover or can't go find a new piece of cover in an area, hell, they may just hit that water and ride it until it flushes them out into somewhere different. And that could be 200 feet or it could be 200 yards or it could be 2 miles down the river. And I actually have, this is a story I've told, hold on just 1 second. I got to get my Mac charger because if I don't, we're not going to be having a live stream.
All good. So Sam, from your neck of the woods, does any of this translate to things you've seen?
Yeah. Actually a lot of stuff that Andy was talking about, is a little bit more like natural to what I've seen. And I think at the same time too, like with bluegill playing as big as they do, like a lot of it is really simple, like light, wind, and protection, you know. I see a lot of people in the comments talking about wood, and like anytime you're fishing a river around me, like wood is everything. I mean, again, like that's also having so many bluegill and having so many fish that rely on bluegill. Like you go cruise down any bank on the planet and you check the tree, guess what you're going to see? Like 15 bluegills staring back at you all stupid looking. So around me, like that wood is the deal in rivers.
Yeah. That definitely makes sense. I mean that, I think you say rivers, but I feel like that could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Retaining that heat. We talked about that, Andy, in some of our fall episodes prior to this was, you have wooden docks. Those are the docks that always stay in and always hold
them. Especially if they have a little bit of that slimy green algae on them, like money.
Oh, yeah.
Same way with trees. Like if it's not new, you want there to be like algae on it or a little bit of moss or have it near grass or have a nice ditch behind it because the current is actually hitting it head on. Mm-hmm. Like those are your prime feeding spots for fish to feed. And the algae just brings in bluegills because everything else is eating that algae that lives in it. So,
yeah.
And so what I was going to refer to is exactly what the creek crawler and then Mr. Shannon Gorman was talking about. Creek crawler said he's got some 19-inch smallmouth that lived in the same exact waist-deep hole for 4 years, got up to 21 inches, and then they lost track. And then Shan said he's had similar experiences with largemouth. So it's a little story I was going to tell. I think I've told it here before. I think it was on the last podcast we did about River Current. My dad caught the same fish 4 weeks in a row, four separate times, essentially within a 10-foot circle. Catch the fish in the River Current, would swim back to the same exact spot. Just live there. And this kind of goes back to what you were just saying about the trees. It's consistency. Those fish, I mean, they're not like us. I mean, we try to apply way too much to a fish. You know, we try to anthropomorphize a fish, which means give human characteristics to an animal.
I was going to say, you're going to need to explain that word.
Yeah. Yeah. Anthropomorphize. That means
that's a big one.
Yeah. It means to give human characteristics to an animal.
How many people you think are trying to spell that right now?
Yeah. I can't.
All right. Spelling bee. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fired up
for morphize. And my redneck ass too, it probably just sounds wrong. So like people are like, was that a TH or a PH? But anyway, so like we try to think, oh, this fish is, you know, thinking this or doing this. It's all instinctual, you know, and if a fish can find consistency instinctually, it's going to thrive because then it takes out instinctually a component of survival. You know what I mean? Like it's a component of survival that fish doesn't have to deal with anymore. So if it's got a tree and it's its tree and it lives on that tree and there's plenty of food on that tree and there's plenty of, you know, oxygen on that tree and there's plenty of shade on that tree and there's plenty of places to hide on that tree. Well, man, like think about all of the things of a survival of a fish that it just eliminated. And then if that tree is 10 yards away from a good area to go have sex and make babies, guess what? You just eliminated for that fish. I mean, literally all the fish has to do is exist. And if it's hitting all of its little check boxes for what the fish has to do, then dude, you've got a good place where fish live. I mean, that's why there's honey holes. And that's why there's, you know, like what's the word I'm looking for? Like, you know, public, like, what is it? Like, you know, where everybody goes and fish, like on, there's a pot on the lake where everybody goes and fishes.
Community hole.
Like there's a reason that those public fish, access. Listen, community hole. All right. Those community hole, never mind. So that's, I mean, there's a reason that those fish live there all the time. And it's because it's obviously hitting those check boxes that eliminates a fish's need to do certain things to survive. And if they can eliminate those check boxes, that's what their natural instincts are going to tell them to do and want them to do.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, hear that voice crack?
Yeah. Listen here, Peter Brady. Man, I grew my first pubic hair. It's great.
All right. Yeah. All right. Here's what I want to do to wrap this sucker.
Uh-oh.
Oh, was no.
Oh, no.
He broke it.
The 108 mark. Bailey's gone down.
You got me?
Yeah, yeah, you're back. Running.
Go ahead.
What happened?
Oh, you froze.
Oh, did I really?
Yeah.
You nothing changed on my end. You guys just started like, oh. I was like, so what did I do? So to wrap this up, let's go around the horn here and give two of our favorite baits for the fall. From a current standpoint, when we talk about rivers, Alex, we'll lead with you.
Gang. Buzzbait, because damn, why not? Seriously, this goes back to a question I saw earlier. With creeks, if you've never fished a creek, never fished a river, you would be amazed how they will react to big, loud things. Like a lot of those creek fish are going to see these little tiny helgramites and these little baits, you know, little Jimmy comes down there and throws a worm and they don't care. Dude, you throw a buzzbait over their head and that 4-pounder, it's been sitting on that log waiting for that buzzbait to come over its head its whole entire life. I mean, it's like, you know, it's its wet dream. It's like, here we go. It'll kill it. All right. So big, loud topwater buzzbait.
It's like the South for getting invaded from North Koreans.
100%. Red Dawn's my wet dream. It's the same way. I'm locked, loaded, ready to go. And those bass are the same way. When a plopper or a buzzbait comes over their head, they're like, let's go, it's time to kill.
And it's when the banjos start playing. It's like, oh, Bernie.
I do have a question. Have you ever tried throwing like a rat, like one of those Spro BBZ rats over top? They'll come up and eat it. Got it. Yeah.
Yes.
He's like, Andy, stop.
Andy, shut your mouth, Andy. Yeah, anything big like that, like any top water that's big, loud, and gaudy that you think there is no way a bass will eat this here, throw it, because you would be amazed the kind of ungluing that will happen when you throw those things in there. And then the second one is going to be a bladed jig, preferably a slobber knocker, because slobber knocker comes through wood better than any bladed jig. And the one thing that people complain about a slobber knocker, they go, it doesn't hunt like a jackhammer does. Well, that consistency of vibration and consistency of swim when you're in current will help you out a ton, because when a jackhammer starts hunting, what happens is it can get blown out by the current. And when a fish grabs it and it's blown out up like side down like this, guess what? You don't get in their mouth very good that you probably want to get into their mouth really good, a hook. And so I found the consistency with the slobber knocker, especially with something like a longer tailed trailer, like a fluke style bait, it makes it even more consistent. It helps it to just get bit better and get a better hook in those fish when you're in a current situation and perform better in a current situation. So, and then two, it comes through wood really good. So I can toss it up in a lay down, like Mr. Sam here was talking about, and reel it through that lay down and catch fish out of it. So there you go.
Yeah. All right, Sam.
So, I'll give two answers. They're both kind of in the same vein, and I'm thinking it's because you guys got me thinking trees. When it's real tough, I'll flip laydowns with an EWG Ned, and like, you'd be surprised if you're willing to risk it for the biscuit. Like, you got to get bit to lose fish, so you're gonna lose some fish. But like, man, if you're not getting eaten and you're confident they're on wood, like it can be money. Like my dad's psychotic and he throws it on like 20 pound braid with a medium action spinning rod. Like I'm not doing that, but, that's one. And then I love like a little micro jig, like little, like 1/8 ounce, 3/16 ounce jig, like Bitsy Bug or, you know, like Keytec and Nishina make like some of the higher end ones, but like I love those with like a little trooper, like a TRD craw around me. That's money on wood.
Heck yeah. I specifically love the, my dad's psychotic. There's,
I think that, oh yeah, he's nuts. My God.
He's nuts.
He catches them though. He catches them, and it there are times when it doesn't make a lick of sense, but he's got some what's the word I'm looking for? Just some bizarre ways of doing things.
Schizophrenia. Schizophrenia.
Doesn't need to be pretty. It just needs to catch fish.
Yeah. Put it where they live. Yeah, that's it. I like that one. Especially because not many people think, lay down, I'm going to throw a weedless Ned.
Yeah. I mean, around me, the pressure is pretty, like, I mean, I live in a super, super populated state with small bodies of water. And ever since COVID, everybody wants to go fishing. So it's like, you kind of have to, you got to think like a fisherman a little bit, unfortunately, which stinks. So you got to do some weird stuff to deal with some pressure. But, you know, there are days where you'll get paid with a tiny little bag because you flipped a freaking Ned rig into a tree and it happened to work out for you. And you ran that as a pattern.
There you go. Alex, you were just chefing some up on your recent video.
I was. Yeah. I love the weedless Ned rig head from Do It Molds. It's my favorite. Like, I make a ton of them because I break off a ton of them, but it is literally, like you said, it's one of those things, like I can worm it through laydowns and put a Ned rig where a lot of people are like, you can't put a Ned rig there. Like, yeah, you can. That's why I get bit doing it. So,
yep. Andy, what you got?
Oh, man. A rig and a crankbait, like, just because the water's so much bigger. But if I had to go to, like, a smaller river system, I think it would probably be, like, a bladed jig and a spinnerbait. And just cover water and just bang it off as many things as I can and just make noise. Like, and that's one thing, like, everyone thinks you need to be like sneaky, stealthy in the fall with like these fish and these rivers. Sometimes you just make noise. Like, smallmouth love noise. You could probably jump out of the kayak, do 15 jumping jacks in the water, and you'll probably see a smallmouth come out and be like, what the hell's going on? And you throw in there and you'll eat.
So, oh, yeah. 100%. I literally have seen times with like, I like am paddling and fish like swim off the bank to come see what I'm doing. Yeah. Like they're just curious. They're like,
yeah, hmm. You saw that at the OVF this year.
I did see that. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
I was like, Alex, I'm telling you, when it's that clear, he's like, how close should you're saying like it's your starting spot. I'm like, sit 100 yards away.
Yeah.
And they still came out to you.
Yards away, and I stood up to put my rain suit on, and I see them coming towards me like dogs to a hot dog. And I'm just like, what are you doing? No, no, not yet. Yeah. I literally had a 30-pound bag circling my kayak like Jaws. Like, I was just like, this sucks. This is terrible.
Smallmouth.
No, it wasn't even smallmouth.
These are greenfish.
Oh, yeah. They're just like, ooh, is that a log?
Yeah. Look at that big red and blue log. Look at that ugly guy sitting in it, too. Let's swim around it and see if he'll fall in. Like,
he was at Jurassic Park, Andy.
Squash sighting.
Oh, you know, yeah.
You'll catch him one out of the 30 days you go there.
Dude, and if you do, you
catch him, it's a bag.
Yeah. I mean, dude, the first flipping on a dock, I caught a 6-pounder, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, this is my spot. And then I zeroed. It was
burned. They're like, we see you. We see you. Mister with the big red kayak. We see you.
You should have painted camouflage for that event, or the same like color as the water.
They no kidding. Well, that's what my new kayak, there's a new color in the kayak that I'm getting, not to reveal it yet, but it's very like natural and looks like the sky. And I'm like, I want that one. I was like, I want to look as natural as possible. Like, after doing what I did on Cayuga, I really believe, and I've seen it, fish can see you, they're not going to bite. It's the way that it is. Natural instinct kind of thing, unless they're on a bed. But like, well, at least my fish, y'all's fish are dumber than hell. But anyway, but like, I think that could play. So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Is that Bigfoot on a log? Is
that Bigfoot on a log? Look at that Bigfoot on that log. Let's
of course you're not going to eat. Yeah. Oh, good Lord. Well, I'll say my two for like when it gets that cold temperatures. And I'll say a 3-inch swim bait on a ball head for one, and then a flat-sided crankbait, like a fritz side.
That's what I dig it. I dig it. Fun. I do have to bring up one thing before we say quits, though.
You're not allowed.
I don't care. Shannon Gorman brought up a fantastic point. He said, undercut banks hold bigs, 100%. I tell you something else. We're talking about the consistency in the river. You probably know what the most consistent thing in a river is? A rock. And when I say a rock, I mean like a rock that can't move. A bluff.
Just a boulder?
No, that's not just a boulder. It's a rock. like small rocks. Rocks that can't move. Big rocks. Bluff walls. Bailey, you know, I think we were in the green room where you may have said it would get one. Chickamauga get one on bluff wall. Mm-hmm. Literally the most consistent consistency of consistencies right there in that thing is a bluff wall. And anywhere there's a bluff wall, whether it's a lake, a river, a creek, whatever, fish live there all the time, no matter what, all year long. All you got to do is figure out what they want to eat. And what's crazy is in a lot of these rivers where you've got a tremendous amount of current, erosion over time has cut these banks and these rocks way back. And so it's amazing. The other day I caught big spotted bass. I released it and I literally watched it swim down and go up under a rock that to my eye didn't have a hole in it. But that fish, because it lives in that little world, there's a hole down there. And that fish swam way back up in that hole. And there's probably some hole that goes 5-6 feet back up under the bank, where what we were talking about earlier, that's his little dome. That's his little area. That's his little home. Checks all of the boxes. And those fish live there all the time. Most consistent thing on the river for me is natural, like bluff style or like unmovable rock. Unmovable, big rock. So I just thought I'd put that out there. A little
sand. Yeah.
That spot. I was going to say that spot cued the Forrest Gump voice. It was like, Jenny, I think I'm going to go home now.
Yeah, 100%. I decided not to eat buzzbaits no more, and I went home to Jenny. I've been living in these rocks ever since. Yeah. Buzzbaits and crash crawls, Jenny. We go together like peas and carrots. These
lures are like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
I remember one time back in 1963, Sasquatch was on a log trying to catch me with a buzzbait.
You're shockingly good at that, Alex.
I know, right? Yeah, it's that. I'm close enough to Alabama to be able to do it. That you got
Lamba Lamba.
Oh, Alabama, you got to do that and McDonald's, not McDonald's, McDonald's. So,
all right.
But yeah, to quickly add on that as we wrap up here on that point, something I've learned
from the River Gurus on the Susky when we went there for the Hobie last year was you could be in a on a part of the river where it looks like there's absolutely no rock to hide behind whatsoever, but smallmouth could be there because there might be one that's a little bit higher than the rest. The current's hitting it so hard that it pushes up, which gives us the bass just enough space to tuck behind that. Mm-hmm. And that was extremely eye-opening to me because I was like catching my bigger fish in the middle of nowhere. There wasn't anything unique about it, except in that 3 feet, there was just big enough rock for them to be sitting behind that. I found that was really intriguing why it was more bigger fish that were sitting in those areas that it's probably a pressure thing. That mm-hmm. no one sees anything. They're not fishing for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yep.
And also, like, behind those rocks, too, I guarantee there's, like, a 3 to 4 inch depression that's just got a little bit more water over their back, and they feel a lot more protected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing about, like, fishing current, too, is, like, spending a lot of time doing it, spending a lot of time on rivers, I have found things like underwater current seams that you can't see visually on top of the water. Like on top of the water, you think, man, that is just absolutely ripping right through there. But 4 feet under the water, there's a hole. There's literally like an eddy, a bubble in the current. And it's just because there's like a rock or there's just something about the way the bank bends that creates a current. You could have 15 fish sitting in that one little bubble, you know? So,
yeah, you can correct me here if I'm wrong, but a lot of times I find that happens a lot when you have like a run of water, right? Like it's all bubbly. Yeah. It's not fast, but it's not soft. But when you start getting like boils, it tends to be less conducive for fish to live in. Like I don't see a lot of fish that live in boils. They like that soft, riffly run.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because
soft big, underneath.
Yeah, I mean those big bulls. It's just turbulence.
Yeah,
I mean that's literally not what the fish wants. You know, it doesn't want to be in the turbulence. And like, we were fishing the other day, or actually Monday. And my buddy Josh, he's going down this bank. He's like, man, I don't understand. Like, he's like, there's always fish here, but it's moving so fast. And I'm like, look up, like right up on the bank. And he's like, yeah. I was like, you see that like literally 12-inch section of water right there that's moving backwards just a little bit? He's like, yeah. I was like, it's because like what you said, it's that constant flow is making that back eddy, and those fish live right in that back eddy. You know what I mean? And it's something, unless you're looking for it, you're going to miss every single time. But I can promise you the fish know they're there because they live in it. You know what I mean?
Or there's a shelf that's allowing them to live underneath and there's almost no current literally hitting them where they live.
Yes, exactly. And yes, foam is home.
Foam is always home.
Foam is always home, son. I cannot tell you how many times I've thrown a swim bait up into a foam pocket and cranked it once, and it's like, there's one. Yeah, foam is home, baby.
So, and it's funny that he says in fly fishing, foam is home. Like steelhead fishing, like if the creek is low and we still have foam, we're going to catch them. Like, it's like, as soon as there's no foam, forget about it. Don't fish the creek. But if you have foam, you're home and you're going to get them. And you always get them. Like, when you're looking for, like, and this is something I'm going to ask you to do too when you're fishing next time you're on a river.
Yeah.
If you see a break, like a current break, and you see foam,
yeah,
cast into the foam, like just the foam bubble line, right?
Yeah.
And throw away from it and count how many times you actually get caught in the foam, like you catch fish in the foam as opposed to away from it.
Yeah.
And it's gonna really open your eyes when it comes to current.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And the reason foam is home is because the foam is naturally gathering in the spots where the current is being broken.
Correct.
And so just like what we were talking about earlier, the fish want to sit on those areas because just like the foam, the bait fish, the crawdads, the plankton, the nutrients, everything gets washed into those areas. So that's like the washout point. That's literally like where it gets washed to and where it's going to naturally slow down, stop, pause long enough for a fish to absolutely crack its ass. So,
hell yeah, brother.
Plain and simple.
We love foam.
We love foam. That's a t-shirt.
So many t-shirts. We love
foam.
Speaking of t-shirt, for folks that are listening and also you guys, would you guys buy a t-shirt? Hear me out. It is a Sasquatch holding an American flag riding a horse.
I would buy that.
Yeah, probably. That'd be a good hoodie.
I love how you're specific.
I like hoodies. I like hoodies, all right?
Would you wear that, Sam?
Oh yeah. I need a cool little hat logo too on a trucker, but
definitely a bumper sticker. That speaks character.
We could get a kayak sticker.
It would be. But you imagine there's a truck going down the road and it's just a buck and bronco Sasquatch holding a waving American flag. That tells you a lot about that person.
You know what? Scratch the squatch. We're just putting Rudd on that person.
Oh yeah, let's do it. I want to be riding a Velociraptor though.
Yes.
Brendan's got a question, but I don't know what his question is.
Yeah, which question you mean, Brendan? We hit on your foam home. Sounds like home. That Lil Wayne song, "Phone Home."
Phone is home.
I don't know which question he was asking, but either way, while he answers back, to wrap up, folks. Obviously, you have until the 21st of November to get in on the giveaway. I remember getting in on the giveaway does a lot of good for a lot of people that are in need of some help. And thank you again, Sam, for taking the time out to join us. And
I think this was his question. Sorry.
I don't know what kind of kayak I'm getting, to be honest with you. I'm taking whatever they'll give me, to be honest with you. Whatever shows up, that's what I'm getting.
Whatever. It moves.
So sorry to cut that off. I saw
it moves and don't sink. I'm down.
But regardless, Sam, thank you so much for joining us, man. And thank you to the folks like yourself at Project Purple that are doing a whole lot of good for the people that need it. So thank you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you guys so much again for having us on, giving me a chance to kind of go to school, do some learning, but also to have the opportunity to kind of spread the message. And get some people to enter this raffle, man. There's some cool stuff to win, so check it out.
Heck yeah. Alex, pleasure as always, my friend.
I come here to make you guys look better. It's all right.
That's exactly what it is. It ain't us looking good. That's for dang sure.
Yes, man. I love you boys. Yeah, no, anytime. You know me. I talk to a wall, so I love this. This is my favorite. I literally told Bethany today, I said, I'm really excited to get on live. And she's like, why? I was like, because I like to talk, and it's an opportunity for me to talk about things that I like. Bass fishing.
Because I like to talk. It's like we're quoting movies out the Hoozo tonight, but that or the Shrek with the old donkey. Lady with the donkey. I love to talk.
Yeah.
Oh, this God. Is good.
Do you know good. The Muffin Man? The Muffin Man. Yes, the Muffin Man. The one that lives on Mulberry Lane. Yes, the Muffin Man.
Did you ever see that Instagram reel of someone that's in a hospital and they had the curtains down and someone next to him? He's like, do you know the Muffin Man? And the person's video filming it, he goes, the Muffin Man. He goes, the Muffin Man.
The Muffin Man.
Someone's obviously hopped up on drugs.
Oh, God, I love it. Brendan's question came through. He said, he's never fished a creek before. What few baits would you bring to effectively fish it? We kind of answered that. Brendan, you like throwing big stuff. Take something big. Like, because he likes to throw big.
Such a jerk.
Jackass.
Yeah, that's right. Brendan says, Dan Bailey, you could do a good donkey impression.
Thanks. I am Johnny Knoxville. Welcome to Jackass.
Yes, that's it.
Brendan, you like throwing big baits. Take one of your big glide baits. And then something moving like a spinner bait or a bladed jig. So literally something in that category. One big single hook, something you can move a whole lot. And then if, God forbid, it has to be broken out, a spinning rod with a Ned rig, light Ned rig. I mean, you can't go wrong with it sometimes, especially what I like to say is like whenever we're in those transitional times. So like right now, here in Tennessee and really throughout the country, we've had this giant drop in temperature. And so when we have this giant drop in temperature, obviously, like, we can't probably go throw the chatterbait and the bladed jig and all that. We're going to have to break out the freaking Ned rig. And so right now is a good time for a Ned rig. But any other time, if the water is literally between 60 and 50, big, loud, gaudy things, have fun. This is like right now it's time to have fun in a river. Like, you can go have fun. And that's why I love it so much.
Heck yeah. 100%.
Gang, gang.
Yes, sir. Well, folks, fellas. Appreciate every single one of you. And guys, next week we have for Tuesday Night Live, getting back to the normal scheduled programming. Next Tuesday Night Live, we have the new Bassmaster Elite Series rookie Cal Patrick coming
Cal?
On the show.
Cal.
Or Cal.
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 Cal. Cal. Cal. Cal. Cal. Cal.
Patrick. Kyle.
Oh, I thought
A-Y-L-E.
Cal Naughton Jr., like, shake and bake, baby.
I think I can help with this Pam, Pam dilemma.
Yeah. Pam, oh, Pam, P-A-M-N, Pam. Oh, I understand now. Both of you, out of my office. Why are you wearing tuxedos?
I feel like this show is literally, it's bass fishing tangents and movie quotes.
Yes. Yeah. I think I got a movie. Hold on, let's see.
The friggin' frogs game.
No, that's not the movie. Nope. Nope. Nope.
I'd like to take.
Nope.
My wife.
Nope.
Hi, I'm Jack.
Nope. Never.
How are you guys?
All of them.
All right. It's just one of those days. All right. Let's get out of here.
Oh, God. There's nothing else to add on that. But, folks, appreciate you. I'll see you on the next one.
Bye.
1 Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you can and your app allows it, please leave us a rating and review. It really helps us get seen more, which allows us to access more time and more variables to be able to bring to the show to make it better for you guys. So hope you enjoyed it. And if you did and you liked some of the things we talked about in this episode and want to check out our show partners, all of that is in every single show description. You can click down there. It's got all of our discount codes, all of our links to our show partners, where you guys can go and support the people that support this show and help us make this show happen. And of course, this show does not happen without you guys. You guys know we appreciate you. You're the Searsanga fam. You're the reason we're here. Appreciate y'all, and we'll see y'all on the next one.